This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. While skies were dark this morning on account of the weather, mornings are about to get brighter earlier. And it's because of what you did Saturday night, or maybe yesterday morning. You changed your clock. Moving an hour back isn't so bad if you're one of those people who want an extra hour of sleep, at least on day one, or some more AM light. Take Nancy, for instance, who says, "I hate waking up when it's still dark out, so I'm okay with it." Others, like Hillary, favor the switch to daylight saving time and want to stick with it. She says, "I hate it," all caps, exclamation point. Standard time brings more darkness combined with cold, dreary weather, and it just makes the winter months that much more depressing. Whichever the preference, more and more researchers, politicians, and the general public are calling for an end to this biannual back and forth. Among that number is Eric Herzog. Eric is a Washington University biology professor who believes it's time to ditch daylight saving time permanently, and he joined the show earlier this year to share why. I started our conversation by asking him what first made him question the utility of daylight saving time.
As a scientist working on the study of what wakes us up and what puts us to sleep, I eventually found myself as the president of a society of researchers who work in this area. And we put out a position statement based upon the benefits for human health of living according to the sun. And standard time was designed so that the sun would be directly overhead at noon in the middle of your time zone. And daylight saving time shifts that by an hour, and so it really messes with our circadian rhythms.
Mm-hmm. And what is a circadian clock, for those who are not familiar?
Every day, if you just listen to your body, you would wake up and go to sleep on a schedule based upon an internal biological clock, something we call a circadian clock. It keeps about a 24-hour time. Every organism on this planet has a circadian clock in it that helps it synchronize to local time and anticipate the challenges of day and night. You can think of plants, for example, needing to be ready to photosynthesize during the day and then being switching their metabolism entirely to using sugars that they've made during the day during the night so they don't starve to death. Mm. Same thing's true for us. We need to eat during the day and make it through the night as we sleep.
So if it's just 1 hour, I mean, what kind of disruption comes with that time change, or with time changes, you know, both twice a year? And I mean, aren't weekends an example of how we mess with our own circadian rhythms?
That's a beautiful example, Elaine. So we like to talk about something called social jet lag, which is the difference in when you go to sleep during the week and when you go to sleep on the weekend. And the greater that difference, the greater your social jet lag, the difference in your social schedule versus your biological schedule, the more you're at risk for things like obesity, cancer, mood disorders. And so we think that social jet lag that we experience on a weekly basis is exacerbated during the switches to daylight saving time.
Mm-hmm. Now, we use the terms spring forward, fall back as mnemonics, I guess, in a way to remember what is going on. I think spring forward sounds very optimistic and falling back has sort of a more pessimistic connotation to it. But, you know, what are the problems that are associated with falling back or, you know, quote unquote, gaining 60 minutes?
Yeah. So the idea is that in the fall back, we get an extra hour of sleep. In the spring forward, we lose that hour of sleep. But really what's most important is that what's changing is the clock on the wall, but not the sun in the sky, mm-hmm. right? The Earth continues to rotate as if, as it has done for billions of years. So we are trying to somehow adjust to a clock on the wall without any help from our environment. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a real challenge for us to figure out, how am I going to change my schedule according to this clock when my body clock is still trying to synchronize to local time, to mm-hmm. the light, to the daylight cycle?
I'd like to introduce another voice to this conversation, someone who's got some insight into how non-biologist everyday folks feel about these time changes, and that's Stephen Rogers, a professor of political science at St. Louis University. Stephen, welcome, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me today.
So, Stephen, the latest SLU YouGov poll, which is this survey that was that I've just mentioned, asked 900 likely Missouri voters their preferences on daylight saving time. What is it that they said?
So we surveyed 900 likely voters in Missouri in February. And then here, what the overwhelming consensus is that we just do not want to change our clocks. And so here, about 78% of voters basically said we either want permanent, say, daylight savings time or permanent standard time. And so then within that, 47% of voters said they wanted daylight savings time all year round. So they wanted that extra light in the evening. And then 31% indicated they wanted standard time all year round. So a little bit more light in the morning. And then 16% of voters said their preference was to kind of stick with what we got, where we are switching back and forth in the spring and the fall.
Mm-hmm. And has this poll been done in the past? And if so, I mean, how do the results from the polling in February this year compare to past years?
So I'm not aware of a poll that's been done of just Missouri voters on this subject. However, YouGov with CBS News did a nationwide poll on the subject, and in here the results were very similar. So for example, 46% of voters nationwide wanted to have daylight savings time year all year round. In Missouri, we found this figure to be 47%. Mm-hmm. Across the country, 33% wanted standard time all year round. In Missouri, it was 31%. And then finally, 21% kind of wanted to switch back and forth across the country. And in here in Missouri, it was about 16%. So there weren't great differences kind of between, say, it's what Missourians appear to feel and then along with what the nation feels.
Mm-hmm. And were there perhaps any demographic factors that sort of stood out when it came to differences of opinion on this subject?
So I was actually somewhat surprised by this. There aren't very strong demographic factors, like kind of main differences. We didn't find really any strong differences between gender or age of individuals. This is probably a rare bipartisan issue in the state of Missouri, where 74% of each Democrat, Republican, and independent voters all are in favor of, like, let's just pick a lane and go with it. High-income voters are slightly more preferable to kind of switching than others. Compared to conservatives, liberals want to switch a little less. But none of these kind of differences I would kind of necessarily run home with, saying, like, oh, my God, there's a very big difference happening.
Right, right. So, Stephen, the poll that you're talking about, it was specific to Missouri voters. Mm-hmm. We are in the middle of the country. Mm-hmm. Eric, what are some of the differences in how people respond to these changes on the clock depending on where they are in the country?
Yeah, I think Stephen's results are really indicative of the sentiments nationwide. People associate daylight saving time with summer, and so it is positively associated. So one of the things I liked about Stephen's survey was he made it really clear what is the difference between daylight saving time, more light in the afternoon, compared to standard time, more light in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It does differ a little bit as we move from east to west within a time zone and as we move further and further north, as you can imagine. So in St. Louis, for example, if we go to permanent daylight saving time, we'll have 100 more dark morning commutes each year than if we were on permanent standard time. And so those dark morning commutes are what really drive the physicians and the scientists to say, in terms of human health and safety, standard time is better.
Mm-hmm.
The big move nationwide, as Stephen mentioned, is really a bipartisan move to get rid of something. There is one politician in Florida who's proposed the Sunshine Act. And the Sunshine Act is inspired by a financial argument for the state of Florida, where golfers will be able to golf more during daylight saving time in the afternoons.
Mm-hmm.
So the golf lobby is actually really heavily pushing for permanent daylight saving time, whereas physicians and scientists are pushing for standard time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Stephen, why was daylight saving time first adopted?
So it was like very, very first adopted kind of for energy purposes. And so the first city that adopted it was Ontario, Canada in 1908. And then, but it was more widely adopted. The first country to adopt it was Germany during World War I. Mm-hmm. The United States copycatted that a little bit. And then we adopted it for World War I, but only for about 7 or 8 months. And so that's when it was first adopted. We adopted it again in the United States for World War II. And then after World War II, some states kind of went rogue and they kind of did things on their own a little bit, and there's confusion created. And it wasn't until the Uniform Time Act of 1966 that like was basically like, okay, are you going to have daylight savings time and switch or not? And then this is largely what we have followed since the 1960s. During the energy crisis in the 1970s, we did switch to permanent daylight savings time once more, but people got upset with it very quickly. Mm-hmm. And they repealed it in 7 or 8 months again. But largely since the 1960s, we've been following the same kind of standard where we've tweaked maybe the months that we switch. But yeah, the original purpose was for energy purposes around the wars.
And just to clarify then, is that part of that meaning, that history of that going back and forth and who put in place the rule that these changes should be happening, is that why it is a political science question of interest?
Well, here it's like an interest, so political science and politics in general, and so kind of has brought up by Eric, in which it's like this has effects not only businesses, is affecting our, say, our health, and so it could be a public health issue as well. And so in here we are interested is kind of like there's other states, for example, I believe it's about 19 states already have what is known like as a trigger law that says like once the federal government basically says like you can start going how you like independently, then we can then switch automatically. And so here, if you kind of think about a trigger law, what our listeners may be more familiar with is like, remember when the Dobbs decision was struck down, Missouri instantly implemented, for example, then abortion would be illegal in the state. Mm-hmm. If the Sunshine Act that Eric kind of talked about earlier did end up passing, and then we passed one of these trigger laws, we would just kind of switch off to maybe having either always daylight savings or always standard.
Mm-hmm. We heard from Pete, who said, I would prefer not changing the clocks and staying with standard time. There are several reasons for that choice. It doesn't mess with circadian rhythm, and daylight in summer is over at a reasonable hour, to name only two. So, Eric, that gets to this question. I mean, we've just talked about how legislation has happened, considerations around economy, but if this does not align, Eric, with biology, I mean, why are we still doing this?
I think there is an argument to be made that there are many different perspectives and reasons that people bring to the table for why they have a preference. The one that really has impressed me over the years is that people just think of daylight saving time as summertime, and they think, I love summer, it's longer days. But there really is no saving of day, of daylight during daylight saving time. It's, you know, day length is going to change as the seasons pass. Where scientists and physicians have come down, it's been arguments that are really based upon differences in human health from the eastern edge of a time zone to the western edge of the time zone, mm-hmm. where there are increased rates of disease as we move further west. Further west, you get later and later sunrises, like during daylight saving time. And where we've tried to collect data when people went to permanent standard time or permanent daylight saving time. But in fact, it really is one of the reasons the debate keeps raging is that we don't have a lot of data to convince everybody that we will save energy, we will improve human health, we will see reduced crime. But the evidence right now is that permanent standard time would see an improvement in general in most of these categories.
Mm-hmm. We had William write to us with an interesting proposition, which is to split the difference. I mean, biologically, would that really do much of anything, Eric? And Stephen, I mean, is that sort of an approach something that's ever been considered?
So I admit I am not aware of a split the difference of the half hour, maybe spring forward. Eric may be able to chime in on that. But here it's also kind of like one thing with policymaking is that we do have to like balance a little bit like simplicity versus, you know, what we can like was necessarily best, because sometimes necessarily the best solution in terms of like a pure data oriented is like you have to be able to make sure that, say, the populace is accepting of the decision and then also they can understand the decision a little bit more. And at least from my perspective, if I was like tweaking by a half hour a little bit, then it'd be like it gets a little weird to me. But that just may be because I've always lived in a world of, well, I always spring forward and fall back an hour.
Yeah.
But it's up for consideration. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Eric?
Yeah, it's not going to help very much.
Right.
It's nice to see people considering compromise as an option. There are certain places on the planet where they're clearly in the wrong time zone. And those places, for example, Portugal,
mm-hmm.
everybody thinks about the Portuguese as being these extreme late birds. And actually what's happening is just the sun rises so late in Portugal for their time zone, that they're actually waking with the sun just like everybody else around the planet,
mm-hmm.
But their clocks are saying that they're really late birds.
Yeah, Eric, something that you had mentioned earlier has to do with safety and danger, and you are critical of how early we start school for kids. So maybe I don't know if this is sort of a chicken egg when it comes to safety and danger in school starts and the way systems are set up. Why is it that you're critical of this early start time for kids?
So kids are natural late birds. This is part of our biology where we are born to be relatively early birds. And then as we move into adolescence, most humans will progressively wake later and later and later and sleep in later and later and later. And then around 19 and a half years of age for women and 21 years of age for men, we see the end of adolescence. We start to progressively wake up earlier and earlier and earlier. The result of making, for example, high schools start when high school students would rather be sleeping is they're falling asleep in class when we'd rather have them learning.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't seem like we're going to be in any significantly different place, you know, in the next 1 or 2 years. But Stephen, as you look at the results that have come in from the poll and the way people feel around the country, I mean, what do you think it would take for everyday people to sort of rise up and push for a change that actually is implemented?
Well, I think we actually may be a little closer than a lot of people realize, because like the Sunshine Act that Eric referenced earlier, it passed unanimously in the Senate in 2023,
mm-hmm.
and it just kind of got held up in the U.S. House. And so then here, we can probably look at Congress right now and be like, okay, some stuff is not coming out of the U.S. House, and it may not anytime soon. But something passing unanimously in the U.S. Senate is also very rare.
Mm-hmm.
And then here we can see in polls probably across the country, whether nationwide or here in the SLU YouGov poll, voters seem to want a little bit of change. And then in it, if there's bipartisan support and there's not many people opposed, it may just be an easy issue to be like, hey, we did this thing. Now, whether we make the right decision is a question I think Eric can speak to a lot better than I can.
Yeah.
But here, something passing unanimously in the Senate, maybe for the golf lobby, it may not necessarily, like, it may suggest it's like, this could just maybe happen one day.
That was my conversation from this past March with St. Louis University political scientist Stephen Rogers and Washington University biology professor Eric Herzog.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.